Puerto Rican Independence Party. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 7:59. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today we'll talk about marijuana, a plant with multiple uses that was stopped by racism and classism. Do call in with your questions, comments, or favorite strains.
One, two, ready, go!
Tune in to KBOO Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans. We'll have access to five stages of fantastic traditional and contemporary New Orleans jazz and blues, brass bands, and interviews and commentary by the best that WWOZ has to offer. That's the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, starting Monday, April 27th. The weekdays, we'll broadcast it from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, we'll broadcast the festival from noon to 5 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
The Creative Music Guild, Merrillhurst University, and KBOO Community Radio are proud sponsors of a weekend residency by Mark Rabeau, May 8th and 9th at Merrillhurst University. Renowned guitarist and composer Mark Rabeau will perform a solo concert on Friday, May 8th at 8 p.m. and will lead a workshop on group-free improvisation on Saturday, May 9th from 2 to 5. The workshop is open to musicians of any experience level, and all instruments are welcome. Both events are taking place at the St. Anne's Church on the Merrillhurst campus, 17600 Pacific Highway, which is Highway 43. More information about the May 8th and 9th events featuring Mark Rabeau can be found on kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
About a reaper 5 feet long, mighty mint but not too strong. You'll be high but not for long. If you're a viper, I'm the queen of everything. I've got to be high before I can swing. Light a tea and let it be. If you're a viper, when your throat gets dry, you know you're high. Everything is dandy. Truck on down to the candy store. Bust your conch on peppermint candy. Then you know your body's thin. You don't care if you don't pay rent. Sky's high and so am I. If you viper. reaper 5 feet long. Mighty men's but not too strong. You'll be high but not for long. If you're a viper, I'm the queen of everything. I've got to be high before I can swing. Light a tea and let it be. If you're a viper, when your throat gets dry, you know you're high. Everything is dandy. You truck on down to the candy store. Bust your conk on peppermint candy. Then you know your brown body thin. You don't care if you don't pay rent. Sky is high and so am I. Tell me if you're viper.
Man. Man. Hey, today, unlike a usual show, we're not going to deal with the murderous behavior of the nation state, and we're not going to pay much attention to the incredible racism in our society, and we're not going to deal with poverty, and we're not going to deal with health care, and we're not going to talk about the disaster that is unfolding in the Middle East. No, we're going to talk, because we're going to talk about marriage, Warner, because today is 420.
Joe, that was that was yesterday.
What?
Yesterday, man.
What?
Yesterday was 420.
What?
Today's 421.
What happened to yesterday?
You 420'd it.
Oh, man. Oh, I was afraid of that. I can't. Gosh, golly whiz. Oh, man. Oh, no. I missed the whole holiday. Oh, I can't believe it. Okay, this is KBOO 90.7 FM dial in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe talk radio show. Abe ain't here. It's just me, Joe. And even though apparently I missed 420, and I guess it's 421, we're going to talk about marijuana. We're going to talk about the repression of what could have potentially been a significant, still can be, significant drug to parse into medicines that can help relieve cancer, can help cure all kind of thing. We're going to talk about how useful it is for eye disorders. We're going to talk about all of that. And mainly, we're going to invite you to tell us your funniest, your best, your most important, and your medically significant, if you will, experiences with cannabis sativa and cannabis indica. We do want to hear from you, and the number to call is 231-8187. Man, you know, and I'm gonna share. I'm gonna share my youth, my well spent youth. I'm gonna talk about growing up in San Diego, a city. When you went to high school there, I was in a high school, San Diego High School. It was at the start of the sophomore year, first year of high school there. Half of the students were white, and half, a quarter were black, and a quarter were Chicano. And you could find marijuana there, but it was weak. I mean, it was weak. But it was cool. It was cool. The cool people, they smoked the dope. So what I want to do is talk about the whole experience and how outlawry, that is the process of becoming an outlaw, was associated with the smoking of reefer and what all that means in a cultural context. And there's a tragedy behind all this. There are two tragedies. The first is that this drug, this very useful weed, which was known to be pharmacologically significant back in the 1830s, how this drug was kind of outlawed based on race and class and social control, and most significantly at the same time, the result of that was the jailing largely of persons of color for nothing more than possession of the weed. And this is a thing that still hasn't been rectified and really needs to be as we look at the whole issue. And I want to hear from you. this is an opportunity for you, old or young, to talk about your experiences discovering the weed, finding it bad for you or good for you or whatever, and talking about how our culture has embraced or not embraced something that was seen as alien. So that's what it's about. But I have stories to tell, I guess, and I'll own up to some of them. But you know, I'm just an old straight white dude. So what do I know? Anyway, so it's a marijuana. You know, it's I want to point out though that the Portland Mercury, which every issue now has a serious story as well as a bunch of silly stuff. The serious story this time is about how embedded cleverly in the process of the city's governance, the plan to ship and reship poisonous and deadly gases from the oil fields of the Dakotas is underway. Essentially, this is really something that's happening. And, you know, city council is going to be voting on it, I think, next week. Okay, that's the Mercury. Willamette Week has an issue this week also, just coincidentally, called the 420 issue. So both of those popular alternative publications, Willamette Week, which is, you know, pretty conservative, really, and the Mercury, which is pretty irresponsible, really, both of them are this week spent a great deal of time pushing on the marijuana thing. And in case you're wondering, the song we heard there at the beginning was When You Use a Viper. Now, that is a jazz term from the 1920s and the 30s and the 40s for people who regularly indulged in the smoking of non-tobacco intoxicants. And just in case you weren't clear on that, I'm going to open it up for you if you're ready. I want to hear, here's what I want to hear. I want to hear your thoughts on the legalization. And if you feel that it's an evil and poorly thought out idea, I want to hear from you on that. And I want to make a point right off the bat. What is going to be happening, it looks like, in all the states which are legalizing marijuana, is that there'll be a tax on it, which can yield large revenues for the cities and the counties and the states. But in doing so, the governments are creating the same sort of situation that we saw with hooch, with alcoholic beverages in states in the area that made bourbon and other white lightning and other products of that sort. In other words, there'll still be dope dealers because the tax will be high enough, the expense will be great enough, that people will simply go back to their dealers to get the product. That's my prediction. Now, as to the quality of the weed, well, all you have to do is read Willamette Week and the Mercury, and both of them have enormous and complex descriptions of varieties of marijuana that have been bred over the most recent years. It's pretty amazing, actually. The content in THC is outlined in several of these articles. Tetrahydrocannabinols are but one of the important one of the important contents of marijuana. And then there's the problem of this. What happens when you smoke a lot of dope? And do you get cancer? Are your lungs polluted? Does your liver fail? There's a lot of things that need to be researched and made clear, and I don't know much about that part of it. I know my experiences in high school and my experiences working in the peace movement and for CORE in New York City, and my experiences at Columbia University, and my hanging out in the Lower East Side of New York throughout that period of time, which is a brief period of time, about a year, in early 60s. And then we talk about Portland, Oregon, and I'll talk about a lot of other stuff. And I would love to hear from you. 231-8187. Michael. Oh, Michael.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Michael. Michael, I'm going to limit you a little bit because last time you were kind of blowing a little smoke. But anyway, go ahead.
I was blowing smoke last time?
Yeah, yeah. Don't worry about it.
You got stoned?
What's up, Michael?
Well, you wanted stories, you said.
Yeah, yeah.
So, my friend Jeff and I, this is like in the, God knows when, like 1974 or something, we're in a park and we're watching the sunset and we're stoned. We're standing by my VW Bug. And we're so, like, engrossed in the beautiful sunset that it's only when the cop taps me on the shoulder from behind that I realize the two cops have walked up behind us.
Ah.
And the cops say to us, go stand over there by the police car. So we go stand over there by the police car. And I have two joints in my shirt pocket. And I'm thinking, boy, I hope they don't find the joints. So while they're searching my car, I take the joints out of my pocket while they're not looking, and I put them on top of the rear tire of the cop car because I figure they'll never find them there. And when they drive away, it'll get ground up in the ground, and everything will be okay, right?
Mm.
And my plan would have worked great if they hadn't found a little brown plastic prescription bottle with about a quarter of an inch of grass in it.
Mm.
And so the cop walks over to me and says, what's this? And I was like, well, I just shrugged my shoulders. Well, the cops decided it wasn't enough to bother filling out all the paperwork they were going to have to fill out, so they just let us go.
Mm-hmm.
So we got in the car and got out of there, and we went back to my apartment where we were staying. And my apartment, the way it worked was you drove down a side of this. It was shaped like a shoebox. You drove down the side of the building away from the street and parked the car. Then you had to walk all the way back out to the front on a sidewalk to go in through the front of the building. So we parked the car, and we walk out, and we're standing there by the front of the building, and suddenly a police car comes screeching to a stop right in front of us. And these two cops get out, and they've got these great big Maglite flashlights you could kill somebody with.
Yeah.
And they come running straight at us. And I'm thinking, you know, and I'm still pretty stoned, and I'm thinking, man, they followed us. Now we're really going to get it, right? And they run right past us around the corner of the building and disappear. And it just completely wrecked our minds, the two of us. And the next thing that happened was we went up to my apartment and I flushed an ounce of grass down the toilet.
Oh, what a shame, man.
But it, you know,
that's a good story. It's a sad story, but a good story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyways, I just wanted to say one more serious thing.
Okay.
The more serious thing is all these people that are, quote, concerned, unquote, about this, they say, well, but the marijuana is so much stronger now. It's, you know, it's much, you know, they go into that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we had hash then. However strong it is, I'll bet it's not significantly stronger than hash.
I have absolutely no idea. But thanks for the call, man.
Sure.
I do appreciate it. Michael in a lighter mood. Oh, my goodness. There are so many of these kinds of stories. There's a whole subculture of marijuana stories and tales. And I'm holding back on telling mine because I think I want to hear yours. 231-8187. Ed, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Morning.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on why I think marijuana is now becoming legalized.
Okay.
And my theory is that the government doesn't really need a war on drugs anymore. I think most of the desire to have this war on drugs, especially since the United States is the largest consumer of drugs, was to be able to sell arms and equipment to other countries to fight this war on drugs, and also as a pretext to get lots of, lower income people into the prison system. So a lot of the effectiveness of the war on drugs has been, already been taken advantage of. And now that we've got this fake war on terror, it's kind of taken up the need that we had for the war on drugs. Because now we can sell all kinds of military equipment to other countries to fight this fake war on terror, and we really no longer need this war on drugs. What do you think?
Well, I think that the fact of the matter is that the discovery of the value of marijuana, both as an intoxicant and potentially as a medicine, has overwhelmed the assumptions made by Harry Anslinger and others in the 1930s, who wanted to add it to, and did in fact add it to, the narcotic list. And it's still on that list federally.
Yeah, it probably never should have been there.
No. Well, it probably never should have been anywhere. I think what happened, and I really am convinced of this, is that it's fundamentally an attack on working people and a racist attack. Marijuana was seen as alien. It was seen as something that was done by jazz musicians and musicians and non-musicians in the black community in those days. And I think it was also seen significantly as something used by Hispanics, particularly by Mexicans, and therefore was part of a vast and ugly attempt to defile, and this is my awareness of it, I think it's correct, to defile the purity, stupid idea, the racist idea, the purity of the Anglo-Saxon America.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that believe that, and you can use those people to, you know, enforce the laws, but I think there has been some evidence that drugs was used specifically to go after the, say, minority groups.
Oh, absolutely. No, there's no question about it.
And also, I mean, there still is, and I don't believe it's a conspiracy theory. I think this, the thing with Randolph Hearst and his newspapers, because he put a lot of money behind this.
Well, it's interesting that you know that. That's true, and it has a lot to do with paper, of all things.
Absolutely.
The fact of the matter is, a lot of people probably know that, and you know this, obviously, but the usefulness of hemp, not the smoking kind, but the right. paper kind, potential paper or cloth kind, made it very, very possible to make high-quality paper, including newsprint. And Hearst controlled a vast amount of Canadian wood pulp and really did not want competition from the hemp industry.
And it wasn't too long ago that anybody who brought up that subject would be saying, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, marijuana is a gateway drug. And, you know, I guess alcohol and tobacco is not a gateway drug, but it's just a word.
Milk is definitely a gateway drug.
In a marketing department came up with and says, this is how we can sell this abuse that we want to perpetrate on our people.
Well, yeah, you're right. And I want to thank you for the call, man. You made some good points. I also want to point out that milk is actually the primary gateway drug. You will never find anyone who uses heroin or marijuana or speed or is LSD still around? You will never find anyone who's ever used any of those who didn't start on milk. And that's an important point. So I would like to outlaw milk. Okay, 231-8187. BJ, it's interesting. I was expecting a lot of younger people. I'm getting a lot of people my age. Go ahead, BJ.
I'm your age. And also, I was went to school in L.A., Hollywood, and San Diego. Isn't that a coincidence?
That is a coincidence. Do you remember a show back in the early 50s called Harlem Matinee with a DJ called Hunter Hancock?
Oh, God, yeah.
Ah, we have something in common.
Oh, yeah.
That was great rhythm and blues, man.
Oh, I love that. And, oh, the jazz. I used to love the Bird and, oh.
Well, you know, the thing is, L.A., people don't know this, L.A. had an incredibly thriving jazz scene in various neighborhoods, and it was ignored or put down or attacked by the authorities in Los Angeles.
That's right. Yep, up in Hollywood and down Wilshire Boulevard, when I drove a cab, I'd go to those scenes all the time. I remember I was at the Ambassador Hotel, and I went to that place around the corner, and there had a big sign said, "The Jazz Messengers."
Right.
I went in there and heard for the first time, originally just a few feet from that great drummer.
Yeah, no, that's really good memory. Was there something else you wanted to add, man?
Yeah, I'm not feeling well because of this illness, cancer, and I've been okayed for these medications, but drug. But I don't go anywhere anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't drive, and getting it is a difficulty for me. I don't know. I have been okayed by a doctor. It's the pain from cancer. There's a lot of pain involved, and excuse me. Now I'm having it today. I had it last night a lot. That's why I think it should have the doctors should have more ability to prescribe it for people with these kind of a life-threatening diseases like ALS and the thing I have, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Ooh.
Yeah, what a deal that is. They're otherwise known as the Lou, with a great baseball player. Remember him, Lou?
Lou Gehrig, yeah.
Lou Gehrig, and I'm in the first stages of the thing, or it somehow comes and goes, and I never know. What keeps me alive is my cat, Gracie. She keeps me happy. But I want to live in my own home. I find the assisted living places are very expensive, $4,000 or $5,000 or what, if you get a good one for the kind of care I need. And it's affecting now the urinary tract and all kinds of things, so I don't know. But I hope that marijuana can deal with cancer, because nothing else has.
Well, I don't know if it is a curing agent. I think what I've discovered looking at the literature is that various cannabinoids are useful in controlling nausea from the cancer drugs, also useful for reducing pain. Anyway, I really wish you luck, man. And, as Bette Davis said, getting old is, I can't remember exact words, but it's not for sissies.
Yeah, and let's go back to L.A. and the next we'll listen to Billie Holiday. And, oh, my gosh, all those jazz musicians that I've seen, and I didn't realize the next time I come back, I'm going to come back as a musician.
Okay, man, take care. You know, I'm going to let you go, but I want to remind people that HBO is going to do a movie with Queen Latifah playing Billie Holiday, which ought to be very interesting. Y'all stick around. We're talking on KBO 90.7 FM about our marijuana experiences and our marijuana theories and our critiques of legalization and taxation and what it's all about. 231-8187. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe. I have some marijuana stories, but, I'll tell you real quick. I was hitchhiking from Casper, Wyoming to Philadelphia one summer day, and I got let off in St. Joe, Missouri.
Ah.
And I was walking through town, and it was just amazing. It was like being in a movie or a cartoon. Everybody was just bopping along. The dogs were mellow. People were sitting on their porches in the evening. Cars were cruising by, really nice. And some people came along, and some teenagers came along and said, "You want to ride, dude?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. Where are you going?" "Out to the edge of town. I'm hitchhiking east." Okay. And I hopped in, and they took me out there. And what it was the railroad had been burning the weeds alongside the road, and the weeds were weed.
You're kidding.
And the whole neighborhood was just ripped.
Oh, my. Yeah. Oh, my.
Very beautiful. Anyhow, that's not why I called. The reason I called is because of global warming, and hemp is a big solution.
How so?
Industrial hemp. Well, one of the, they talk about how the timber industry got hemp illegal because they wanted to provide butt wipe paper for all kinds of stuff,
mm-hmm,
made out of trees.
Mm-hmm.
Hemp is a better fiber, much better fiber. Constitution's written on it. Jeans used to be made out of it. The sails on the sailing ships was made out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It grows on marginal land, takes very little input. It's a weed. And we could replace timber with hemp. Timber is also a great carbon sink. It's the only real carbon sink around, well, that and soil,
mm-hmm,
for soaking up carbon dioxide out of the air, which is causing our planet to overheat and cause global warming.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that we should, in the process of all this, we should not forget the industrial functions of hemp and its significance, as you suggest, as a crop that can be used and grown on marginal lands, can be very valuable for the making of paper, and as you say, is a wonderful carbon sink.
Yeah, and replace cotton.
Well, I think so.
That's it. Think about it.
I will think about it. By the way, the whole cotton industry, of course, was what made slavery commercially successful in the United States.
Yeah.
A great disgrace. A great disgrace.
Yep.
Anyway, thank you for the call, man.
We're still paying for it.
Yeah, we certainly are. Take care.
Okay.
All right. When we start talking about cannabis, we start realizing how illegally making it illegal and how it was manipulated and how creating a marginality around the use of it as both as an intoxicant and as an industrial product really warped the American economic situation and created a crime without a victim. It's very important to understand that, and that what's really happening now is just a little bit the door is being pried open. What really angers me is that we're discovering, even in the limited research that's now being done, that there are many, many conditions, including some children with constant and unremitting seizures who are helped by various cannabinoids. To understand the product, marijuana, you need to understand, first of all, the two major forms, sativa and indica, and that there are many, many cannabinoids, not just tetrahydrocannabinol, and that it really has medical application in all kinds of ways, all of which has been stalled by a viciously racist and classist attitude and an opportunistic attitude by certain industries over the history of the United States. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Sheila, you're on the air.
Yeah. Well, I've got a comment and a story.
Sure.
The comment is that we say how terrible it is, but we don't read anything about deaths from smoking marijuana.
I've never heard of anyone dying. Maybe if you smoke a lot, you get lung cancer. I don't know.
Yeah, but what about, so marijuana is illegal, but alcohol and cigarettes are legal.
Yeah.
And look how many thousands and hundreds of thousands they kill every year.
Well, those are major industries. You know, part of the reason, there's a lot of theories around this, but part of the reason it is thought that marijuana was maintained illegally was the pressure of the alcohol industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. So now for my little story.
Go ahead.
This goes back maybe close to 50 years ago, and my son, who was then 16, told us when we returned from a weekend away that he had gone with friends and tried the happy little green weed, as he put it. So Mama wants to know what's this all about. So I sit down one evening with my son in his room, and my husband is in the other room watching TV, a husband who considers himself very bright, and my son and I proceed to get stoned. I go into the other room where my husband is watching TV, and we get into this real complicated discussion, and I don't remember what the topic was, and all of a sudden he says, you know, you're right. And here was this stoned lady who had just smoked for the first time having this conversation with the so-called brilliant husband, and he's saying, you know, you're right. So much for what it does to the brain and how it addles the brain. And I have only found good experiences and creative experiences and come up with wonderful ideas, which people always say the next morning you're going to say, oh, my God, what was I thinking? But it's never happened that way with me.
That is really an interesting story.
Yeah, I thought it was also.
And I think the whole generational separation that grew traditionally out of youth involvement with drugs, it was unfortunate, very unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, I've had smoked for probably close to 50 years. My brain is still in good shape.
Are you sure? Are you sure?
I've never found anything wrong with it. So.
Okay. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Yeah, bye. You know, what's interesting here, and I don't know what our audience is. We don't do a lot of audience surveying here at KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. But, and I think a lot of younger people are probably at work at this hour. But I think the whole phenomenon of marijuana utilization is not something restricted to young people at this point in history, if it ever was, not restricted to musicians, certainly not restricted on the basis of culture and class and race anymore, but moreover is so widely used and so underrepresented in the official language of our culture that it's time to acknowledge, and I think this is starting to happen, the effects of the intoxicating marijuana and its importance and the need for research on it for medical help. I really, really am angered by the fact that we were kept from having that kind of research be done over the years since Harry Anslinger and the Bureau of Narcotics, which was the old, before the Drug Enforcement Administration, the old Narcotics Bureau, put it in the classification with morphine and heroin and stuff like that. I want to hear from you. We're talking about Mary Jo Werner. The number to call is 231-8187. John, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm going to stick to one subject so I can keep it short, or one topic about marijuana.
Sure.
I started late using it, like in my late 20s, and before that I was getting the normal amount of colds and flus, and after that I would often get a cold that lasted one day and go away. So I began, without anybody else's influence, began to believe it had immune boosting qualities. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, I picked up some marijuana industry publications like High Times and etc.
Mm-hmm.
And they all talked about the cancer-fighting qualities of marijuana oil and using it on the skin and internally. And so to this day, I haven't seen the mainstream press discuss the fact that it has those qualities. And so to me, that's a conspiracy theory of a deliberate failure of the mainstream press. That's probably why you didn't know that it fights cancer.
I have not. I don't know enough about the medical literature. First of all, I'm pretty ignorant, really, but I do understand that it's relatively benign. And when you compare the impact of it on the culture with, say, alcohol or some other drugs, it's pretty clear that as a recreational phenomenon, it's relatively harmless. I don't think people should be driving high. I don't think they should be driving high on alcohol or any other drug, for that matter.
I agree totally. Although, in discussing this with marijuana users, some say, oh, I'm not high within an hour of using it. Well, if I use it, I'm still affected several hours later. So it's all about the individual. Anyway, that's my comment. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for the call. You know, this is an interesting conversation. In terms of KBOO, I shy away because there's so many horrible things that really need to be revealed, really need to be discussed about the American Imperium. But, you know, 420 and all that, I wanted to devote some time and maybe have a little fun with the whole marijuana phenomenon. And I wanted to hear from you. Rather than talking about my experiences, I will say this, that many, I used to be close to some people on the city council, and many of those people grew up in the kind of maybe post-hipster 60s, 70s even. And they all, not all, they many of them were occasional and maybe even habitual users of marijuana. And you can argue whether or not they made good or bad political decisions. But one thing was clear. The law and the way in which it's applied became more and more absurd when you consider who among the ruling class and among the political class were regular users of marijuana. So now, finally, the drug comes out of the closet, as it were, and we're beginning to have serious conversations both about it as a recreational phenomenon and, more importantly, and this really is the case, its importance, its potential importance for research in medicine and the helping people with all kinds of medical conditions. I wonder about rubbing it on the skin. That's an interesting idea. 231-8187. Jake, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I got a nice little marijuana story. Back in I was raised in Oakland, California, and I started smoking in 1957. And the marijuana was all from Mexico at that, mostly. at that time, a little bit from Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I wanted to drop out of high school in the grade.
Oh, wait, is this 57, 1957?
Yes.
Wow,
and
okay.
My mother wouldn't let me. And so the 11th grade, I got my best grade after she forced me to stay in school was a D. I got all F D's in the 11th grade. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling my buddy, and I'm not going to be able to graduate because I don't have enough credits. So I tell my buddy, I said, geez, how am I going to get out of this? I don't have enough credits now to get out of school in the 12th grade. And he said, man, smoke a joint before you go to school in the morning. We were already smoking. We just started smoking in the 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay. So I started smoking marijuana, smoke a joint in the morning before school. And then so I went. Anyway, I went from D's and F's in the 11th grade to all A's and B's in the 12th grade, and the principal let me out without enough credits. But it was because all of a sudden I smoked a joint, it left the barriers, and I was able to start participating. The teachers loved it, seeing big change in me. And I got graduated without enough credits. And
wow.
From D's and F's to A's and B's by smoking marijuana. In the morning, it kind of broke me down.
That's really an interesting story. You know, that's absolutely counter to the idea that was pushed by the psychological community that smoking marijuana, particularly in teenage years when the brain is developing, is very dangerous and leads to something that they called amotivational syndrome.
Uh-huh.
Well, you had amotivational syndrome, apparently, smoked dope, and it changed your whole scene.
Down my barrier of resisting the system, and I just jumped in and got. It's an amazing thing. I didn't get a C in either one of them. So D's and F's to A's and B's.
That's really interesting.
And I didn't do no homework in both grades. Did it all at school.
Hey, that's an interesting story, man. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Fun.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. You know, I don't know. I am not a scientist on this subject, and I am just very suspicious of the authorities and their response to all of this. And I do feel that more scientific research would be a really good thing about cannabinoids. Remember, marijuana, when broken down chemically, produces many, many, many alkaloids, and many of those seem to have direct application to various conditions of the brain and of the body. So that's really serious. And that was all stalled, all kept from happening because of putting marijuana on the list of narcotics along with heroin and stuff like that. And that is really a great tragedy. Then on top of that, there is the awful truth that many, many people are still in prison, many of them persons of color, many of them Hispanics, for merely possessing marijuana. That needs to be undone. That needs to be changed. The jailhouses need to be opened. Those people need to get some rehabilitation if they need rehabilitation, and freedom. Freedom is really important in this context. But the question of legalization of marijuana plus taxation is an interesting phenomenon. The state of Colorado has made a lot of money on legalizing marijuana. The only danger that I see, apart from the possibility that smoking itself is bad for the lungs, and certain kinds of behaviors like driving on it is unwise, but it's true of alcohol as well. Beyond that, it seems to me that what can potentially be happening is all these candies and so on that are useful for people who don't smoke, who need the drug for their health, those things cannot be allowed to fall into the hands of little children. Little children cannot make an informed decision about drugs. So that concerns me, and that's something that in Colorado they have, you know, all kinds. I see ads in the Willamette Week and the Mercury for chocolates and so forth and so on that are infused with vapor oil and so on. I want to hear from you. We're talking about marijuana and having a kind of a fun time, a break from the horrors of what I normally talk about here on KBOO. 231-8187. Mike, a different Mike.
Oh, hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. my biggest concern about my personal story with marijuana was the antisocial aspect of it as it's being illegal.
Ah.
I mean, that's what made it antisocial. That's what made it problematic, you know. Cause
no, I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. I just haven't touched it since I was 19, you know, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing that I was able to get away from that, you know, did help me grow up was just getting out of the life.
Ah.
You know, the scene.
Right.
Well, all the negative aspects of that life and that scene of marijuana was that it was illegal.
Well, right, right. It's a socially constructed reality rather than a right. chemically constructed reality.
Right. And it goes all the way to the top. After a minor conviction, like I said, didn't touch it after I was 18, into 19. That conviction was what it was when it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the all the way to the top, tough on crime. I guess every state has their own, so it was a state thing.
Mm-hmm.
But tough on crime. Okay, we're tough on crime. Every 4 years, every 2 years, we're tough on crime. Oh, I'm going to be tougher than this guy. I'm going to be tougher than that guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
If anyone is in service or needs a license for education or some sort of career that is actually helping people,
mm-hmm.
working with people, there's a form and a license and an application. Well, you turn that triple copy over to the yellow copy and look on the back, and there's disqualifying concerns like criminal records.
Right.
Well, when I had my conviction when I was just after I turned 18,
mm-hmm.
my particular thing was not on the list. Well, because of the creep, the tough on crime creep, 10 years later, I'm applying at Mount Hood Community College to study to work in physical therapy because I'd been volunteering with MS patients mm-hmm. and my grandma and had a nursing home hundreds of hours. And I would have gotten a scholarship. I would have had a license. Anyway, that was all denied to me. When I applied to work with this MS person, and to make a humble living, and mm-hmm. they were so excited to have a guy, because you know guys are hard to come by in that field,
mm-hmm.
and you know a lot of women doing that, and I just had an affinity for it, and the nice folks at the government office who I had to apply for came back with my application that I had filled out honestly, and I checked that little new box that was just there a year or so
mm-hmm.
from some right-wing Republican wanting to look tough on crime. They came back in tears.
Wow.
And that was it for me. I realized then that I was never going to be able to do anything worthy of service in this state or probably most states.
Well, that is an example of the absurdity of the laws. And I really thank you for sharing that, because that's kind of sad. But I think it's important to realize how outrageous the laws are or were and are. I want to just mention a historical fact. In February of 1967, there was a big marijuana bust in Portland, Oregon. And a rumor at the time, and suggested a member of the Lovin suggested a member of the Lovin Spoonful, instead of lawyering up and keeping his mouth shut, he rolled over on several people who, because of their activities in the marijuana business, led to a discovery that there was in fact a linkage between that community in San Francisco and a large community in Portland, Oregon, which in turn led to police observation in Portland, in the Lyer Hill neighborhood and other neighborhoods, and the Corbett neighborhood, that led to a bust in February of 67 in which 51 people were arrested. Now, I know of at least one young woman who was walking past a house where allegedly marijuana was being sold and was forced into the house and then arrested by the police. I know this because I got a lot of calls from panicked people at that time. They rounded up about 8 kilos, that's a bunch of marijuana, out of this system. They didn't do anything to change the supply structure for marijuana. I know that the narcotics agents working in Portland did all kinds of trickery. And I also know that the federal government was involved in that process. And it became a big, major, major, major story. It really did actually increase awareness of the availability of and the potential usefulness of marijuana. Each bus did the same thing, although, of course, as a recent caller points out, it can change lives for the worse purely because of the law. I want to hear your stories. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this topic after today, but it is important to understand the degree to which use of marijuana was pushed into the role of being an outsider phenomenon. And in that process, good things musically, good things artistically were created, but on the larger context, great research on medical advantages of cannabis, cannabinoids was delayed, and perhaps great information was lost and people suffered unnecessarily, and an alternative to alcohol in terms of altering consciousness was criminalized to a great extent, way beyond what's reasonable. And there are still people in every state in the union who are in jail for the victimless crime of being involved with marijuana. And that needs to be changed. 231-8187. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe. This is Josh, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Nope. That's okay. I just wanted to start out with, I do have a humorous story. As serious as some of this stuff is with, you know, people's lives being ruined and all the money wasted. A couple years ago, my mother-in-law was coming into town, and I had just baked some special cookies.
Mm.
And she came over. My wife and I were both at work, and I was on my way home, and my wife was already home. And I walk in the door, and I see my mother-in-law just kind of standing in the kitchen with a cup of tea, and she's pie-eyed, and she has just got this grin on her face, and she says, "So, Josh, I ate one of those cookies, and, you know, I just immediately knew what happened." And she wrote it out pretty well all night, but, you know, I just remember her just giggling at, you know, just random things that would come on the TV and, you know, wanting to tell stories. And so that was a pretty interesting night, to say the least. But to kind of switch gears a little bit, my father suffered seizures, unknown cause, for quite a while now, and he's been on all kinds of medication. They're still not sure what's going on. It's usually brought on by stress.
Mm.
And he's been on this oil, high CBD oil, for about a month now.
Mm-hmm.
And he just came out here to visit, and, you know, that's when it's usually, you know, high stress situations seem to bring it on. And we definitely had some high stress situations while he was out here, and I didn't see any. He had no seizures. You know, it might still be too early to tell the effects, but, you know, I wanted to put that out there for people. He actually lives in Iowa, and they've kind of got a screwy law going on over there now that he can have he can have the oil.
Mm-hmm.
It's legal for him to possess the oil to treat himself, but there's no way for him to get it legally.
Ah.
So he can have it, but he can't get it. Well, I mean, he kind of, you know, pulled a few strings, and I think he got some from a friend from out of state. You know, I think he could still get in trouble for that, but, you know, he found a way to do it, and, you know, I hope that works out, and I want to encourage other people if they're, you know, to look into that, if they're, you know, kind of struggling with some health, similar health issues. But you know, I'm glad you're touching on, you know, the incarceration rate for possessing a plant. I mean, you know, if we want to talk about crimes against humanity, you know, I think this is a big area here, and people need to get wise to the fact that, you know, under the truth of self-ownership, it's really a huge travesty, and that people cannot manipulate and experiment with their own consciousness how they choose to do so, you know, whatever that means, whether that's psilocybin mushroom, whether that's marijuana, LSD, you know, whatever they want to do. So to me, when an entity such as the government gets in the way of that and kind of circumvents your self-ownership and will actually throw you in a cage for exercising your self-ownership, to me, that's the definition of slavery. That falls under the definition of slavery. And I want people to realize that and take note of the social engineering and the mind control that's kind of come along with getting people to just be okay with throwing people in jail and ruining so many lives and wasting all this money for the possession of a plant. And I want people to understand that, and not only to understand that, but then go out and act on that self-ownership.
Yeah, I actually have to let you go because I need to do some announcements. Okay. But I do agree with what you're saying. This morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, journalist Robert Fisk speaks on the Armenian Holocaust. This special program marks the centenary of the Armenian Genocide, April 24th, 1915, Armenian Martyrs Day. You know, Turkey denies this even to this day. At 10, it's Erica Skadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features an update on the current battle to make medical and recreational pot safe, oh my gosh, and easily available. We'll also feature a special on the latest breakthroughs on the use of CBD and other forms of pot for medical uses. And we'll get a report on what Congress is planning in terms of legalization of marijuana at the federal level. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Remember the name of the station. It's KBOO. Not an accident, everybody. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the donate today. It's really worthwhile supporting this station, which is truly independent, truly progressive, and truly cool. Is a very important activity in the Portland metro area and throughout our listening audience, which ranges all over the world. Do we have time for one more? 231-8187? Yeah, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. A cautionary note, if I might, and let me say that I certainly believe in cognitive autonomy, and actually disclosed the fact that Barry McCaffrey secretly paid the television networks $22 million, that's Clinton's drug czar, to insert White House altered anti-marijuana scripts. And
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
It was a big deal, front page news nationwide after I broke the story in Salon.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why I called. A cautionary note for some of us older males. I remember interviewing John Morgan, MD, a medical doctor in New York who mm-hmm. was a member of Normal's board
mm-hmm.
and certainly an advocate for marijuana. And he said it's pot's dirty little secret. If you get chest pains from pot and it comes on 20 minutes, half hour after smoking, you got to stop or you got to vape, you got to do something. But this MD said that 2-3%, some number of marijuana users, typically males in their 40s or 50s, have heart attacks.
And, well, no, that's an important piece of information.
It's a very important piece of information. He said it doesn't get out. He was a strong advocate and user of pot himself. He was on Normal's board of directors. He's also an MD, and he was a truth teller. And it hit home to me. I find beer a very boring substitute, but I'm here the right side of the dirt. And if you're getting chest pains behind this stuff, folks, pay attention.
Thank you. Thank you for the warning. No, I don't know anything about that, but I think it's an important warning. And we've run out of time. This has been our Marriage and Warner show on KBOO, absolutely unsolicited and unsought, and I just couldn't help doing it. Hope you enjoyed it. I want to emphasize the important points here, the incarceration of the innocent, and the fact of the matter that real research on cannabinoids is only getting underway because of a vast conspiracy to keep marijuana illegal.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon on Sunday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Interstate Lanes in Portland. 12 registered bowl-a-thon teams will be bowling to raise funds for the Network for Reproductive Options Abortion Fund to help make reproductive rights a reality for those who can't afford to pay for an abortion. Again, that's the Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon, Saturday, April 25th, 4 to 6 p.m., at Interstate Lanes, 6049 North Interstate in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We bowl away our daily cares with little strikes, little spares.
And good morning. You're listening to KBOO.